The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Welcome to Sports Radio New York, a network of New York sports talk shows heard on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. The following program is brought to you by Sports Radio New York.
Good evening and welcome to the Talk of New York Sports on this Sunday night, the 29th day of June, 2014. We are part of the network of shows on Sports Radio NY, broadcasting from WGBB 1240 AM in Freeport, Long Island, New York. I'm Bill Donahue. Our engineer Brian Graves is across the way. We've got a very special show for you folks tonight. We're honored to have the daughter of the splendid Splinter with us, Claudia Williams. We'll talk about life with the greatest hitter who ever lived and her new book, Ted Williams, My Father. In the second half, we'll welcome in longtime Major League hurler and another Topps baseball card come to life for me as we welcome former Cub, Oriole, Brave, and Red, Milt Pappas. But as always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, cleverly titled The Talk of New York Sports. There you'll find sports information, trivia, sports and history, show information, and more. So stop by, give us a look. More importantly, please give us a like. You can now also follow us on Twitter at Talk of NY Sports. And all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportsradiony.com. But before I introduce my first guest, I'd like to preface by saying, if you seek stories of Ted Williams, the man who hit 406 in 1941, the man with the triple crowns and the batting titles, the one who was at odds with Fenway fans or the Boston Scribes, if you're looking for books on the man who was an American hero in two wars as a fighter pilot, who gave a stirring speech at his induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown to champion the cause of the Negro League ball player, there are many, many volumes you can find. But if you're looking for a story about Ted Williams, the man, after the cheering stopped and he was alone with his thoughts and his family, there's some books that think they can tell us this, but there's really only one person who truly can, and that's our honored guest tonight, the daughter of the great Ted Williams, Claudia Williams. Claudia, welcome to the show.
That ever had. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Claudia. It's really a pleasure to have you tonight. Several things made me decide to try and get you on the show. The passing of Don Zimmer, because the Ted Williams Museum is now at Tropicana. The passing on of Tony Gwynn. I have so much Ted memorabilia at the house. I have a Gartland statue on the dresser. Of course, your book. I have some contacts at HarperCollins. If I may, before we start, I have a little story for you.
Yeah.
Okay. My parents lived in over in Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember the old Walmart at the corner of Croft and Route 44.
Oh, my gosh. This is backyard. So, yes, I know exactly where you are.
Okay. Yes. This was in the early 90s. My parents used to tell me down there when I used to visit. The big story was Ted Williams lives in Citrus Hills. Now, it was the elusive Ted Williams. It was somewhere over there beyond the big hill as we drove down North O'Brien Highway. Somewhere over there lives Ted Williams. And then I got the call one day. They saw the kid in Walmart, the old Walmart, buying long underwear.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's one awesome. Day they spotted him one day, and that was the big phone call I got. Now, I had given my father as a present a baseball signed on the sweet spot by the great Charlie Gehringer, the second baseman for the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah.
Well, what I didn't know is they had put it in the glove box, and they carried it with them for over a year.
Oh, boy.
Right. Now, lo and behold, one day, I don't know if you remember, there was a Winn-Dixie next to that Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, next to the to that Walmart at the Winn-Dixie, there was a payphone, and who was on that payphone but the Splendid Splinter himself?
Oh my goodness!
So my mother grabs the baseball out of the glove box, walks over, and waits for Ted to get off the telephone, and asks him, "Mr. Williams, can you please sign this baseball for me?" So he says, "Oh, ma'am, it'll be my pleasure." So he signs the baseball. He sees Charlie Gehringer on it. He says, "You know, I'm in very good company on this baseball." And he proceeds to sign it to Bill. Best wishes, Ted Williams. He's as nice as can be. I'm sure if it was me, he would have chased me down the sidewalk. But
No.
just my luck. But I did thank him. I think it was a couple of months later. He was at a card show at Hofstra University, and I was on the line. I was scared stiff. And I said, "Mr. Williams, thank you so much. My parents met you at Walmart." And I forget what he said, but I was scared as anything. But I just wanted to tell you that story about very unpretentious the man was to be shopping for underwear at Walmart. No need to go down to Countryside Mall or International Plaza.
No. For him. Yep, he was a very, non-pretentious, very casual guy. You know, if you watch carefully, he'd probably wear, the same style of khaki pants for about a week. They'd be different. They'd be clean, don't get me wrong. But when he found something he liked, he would be like, "I want a dozen of them."
And that's one of the points made in the book, exactly.
Yeah. And, the story, the fact that he lived here in Citrus Hills has been really a wonderful thing. It put Hernando on the map. Nobody knew where it was before, and now we have fishermen coming to Crystal River for tarpon fishing because Ted Williams lived in this area. And, we would have loved to have had his museum at Fenway or somewhere in Boston, but it's very understandable that real estate there is a high, high commodity. And to have his museum at the Tampa Bay Stadium is the best second home we could have hoped for, because the amount of people that we got in 1 month here in this small town of Hernando is the amount of people we get per day in Tampa.
Right.
So it's wonderful because it certainly deserves that kind of recognition, and the fans just adore it. It's becoming more and more popular. As you probably know, Bill, every year we use my father's same formula to induct the rookie of the year. We identify the top hitters of the year. And, we reach out to them and let them know that based on what our dad viewed as most important as a batter or a hitter, I should say, we would like to invite you into our museum. So it's been really nice all around on many different levels.
Definitely. I was at the opening of the museum when it was at the front gate there of Citrus Hills. I forget what year it was, in the early 90s. And that,
I think it was 94.
Right.
94.
I was at that event, and man, oh, man, with the searchlights and the tent. And that was the biggest thing to happen in Citrus County, I think, since the manatees swam in. Right?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. When that induction dinner happened every year, this town came alive, and I think it was in 94.
Yeah.
Might have been the second one, but President Bush showed up.
Yeah.
We had Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali, yeah, I remember.
Yep. I mean, can you imagine Muhammad Ali? They were like, "Give us directions on how to get there, because we don't know." And it was just fantastic. And Joe DiMaggio was here. It was great. It was wonderful for this area. It was wonderful for the residents that live here. And a lot of people have some very wonderful, fond memories of Dad and who he really was as a man, outside of the Green Diamond.
It was unbelievable. Now, Claudia, what made you feel that you wanted to write this book now? Was it anything to do with that Bradley book that came out a few months ago, that you wanted to set the record straight?
You know what? It sure did. And I have... Before I say anything further, I have a lot of respect for Ben Bradley. He has spent long time. He spent almost 10 years researching stats about my father. And that in itself is a great accomplishment. And he did. He found some wonderful things out. But so many biographers, and not just Ben Bradlee, have tried so hard to portray my father as the man, as the person. What made this man tick? And they just can't do it, Bill. Mm-hmm. And when they use their own opinion, when they haven't even met my father, as credible and as the authority, I have to step in and defend my family.
Okay.
Because it's, you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
As well as I know you, I will never know you as well as your wife, as well as your daughter or your son. I don't know if you have children, but there's no way. And if I've never met you, how can I even do that?
Right.
You know, and so there was just some things, and it wasn't just Ben Bradlee. There were other biographers and journalists, and I just said, this is my duty. This is my moral obligation to defend my loved ones, my family, because they just don't get it. So that's why I did it. And quite frankly, there's one other reason, and it's one that I addressed right away in the beginning of the book. My dear mother suffered a stroke in 2008, and she was diagnosed with dementia. And every day, every year, she forgets more memories. And I encourage everybody out there to write their book. Because you know what? We're all going to forget. And I see it happening with my own mom. And when I finished this book, I gave it to my mom. And I said, Mom, if you read this, you'll never forget. Just keep reading. Just keep remembering these stories. Because this is our family. And not many people will ever know these stories.
Beautiful point, Claudia. Exactly. Excellently told. Now, one of the beautiful things you bring out that really... got to me was the Fenway Park Old Timers game in 1982. You were a little girl. You missed the whole roaring of the crowd days. Tell us about that Fenway Park Old Timers game.
Bill, I got to tell you, it's one of the fondest memories I have of my father. Up until about the age of 10 years old, I thought that my dad was the world's best fisherman. Okay?
Right.
I was up in Canada. I'd be watching him fish. I would be in the Keys on the flats watching him fish. And this man was an artist in action. I mean, I would watch him and be like, he is such a perfectionist. Everything he does is so meticulous, so deliberate. Okay? So when I hear finally that we're going to go see a baseball game, which in my mind all boys play baseball, that Dad happened to have played baseball when he was younger, I was more excited to see my brother on the baseball field because he was a honorary baseball, bat boy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we go to Fenway. It was 1982 May. It's an old-timers game, and we get there. And, of course, the announcer announces all these players that were on Dad's team, and they never say the name first because they're always testing the crowd to see if they know who the player is. And every time the announcer would say some stats about the player, I was impatient. I would tug on my mom's jacket, and I was like, is that Dad? Is that Dad? And no, it wasn't Dad. It would be Dommy, or it would be Johnny Pesky, or it'd be Bobby Doerr. So finally, he gets to a player. Played in left field, outfield, left field, you know, and it starts saying all these stats. And then the last thing I hear, Bill, is that he says, and this man served our country, served 2 hitches in the Marines. And that's the last thing I hear. And I am absolutely swallowed up by thousands of people. And I'm a little girl. Everybody stands up. I can't even see the field, okay? I don't even see my father exit the dugout.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel the electricity in the whole air, and I get goosebumps just talking about it to you right now. It ran up the back of my head, and I look up at my mom. I can't hear a thing. She looks down at me, and she yells, "That's Daddy!" And she picks me up. She puts me on her shoulders, and I look out in the field, and he's standing there amongst all his teammates. And I got to tell you, he seemed huge to me. He seemed larger than life. And I realized at that point he wasn't just a phenomenal fisherman.
Yeah. Wow. What a story. And there he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, larger than life. Unbelievable.
Really was.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of the greatest things about writing this book. I'll admit, I'm the first one to admit, actually, I didn't know a lot about baseball. I knew the main numbers that Daddy had. I knew the main records. I knew that he, you know, his home runs on average, all that kind of stuff. But right in this book, I rediscovered not only all the lessons that he taught us as children, but how they applied to the way he played baseball, okay? This man did not do anything unless his full heart and his full soul and his full dedication was in it, okay? And he demanded that of his children. He hated mediocrity. And he told us, I hope I can swear on the show, but I'll edit if I can't. He said, if you're not trying your ass off to be the best at it, then why the hell are you doing it?
Sure.
Now think about that.
Wow.
That's a lesson. It's a shame that more people don't approach things in whatever they're doing with that attitude. Think about how much better things would be and what a higher standard we'd live by. And that's exactly what our father taught us.
That I no matter what we do. I can see him saying that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
Now,
let me ask you about the famous Williams temper. Now, did you ever see it coming? And did you ever do anything to maybe assuage it?
Boy, I tell you what, if there's one thing, Bill, I could brag about myself, this would be it. I became an excellent forecaster of my father's temperament. Okay, I don't know if it's because I share his genes. I don't know if it's because I was his daughter. I don't know, and I tried desperately, there's no doubt, in my young years to get his attention. But when I figured him out and I realized that when he did get mad and he did explode and he threw out swears like you've never heard before, that they really weren't directed towards me, I figured him right out. And I was able to diffuse it or let it just roll off my back and not be like, you know, hurt and then run off to a corner and cower. No. It was just static. After a while, it was like, oh, that's just Dad looking for attention. But yes, did he have a temper? Absolutely. And did he swear? If there was a Hall of Fame for swearing, he'd be the first inductee, Bill. But when you get to this is the point I try so desperately to make in this book. When you truly know someone, you know their fabric, so that when they do act a certain way, it doesn't affect you the way it would someone who has seen it for the first time. If you only saw Ted Williams erupt one time and walked away, you'd say, geez, that guy's got some issues, you know? But when you've seen it, you know, growing up, and you realize what it really truly means, it's like no other small flaw that someone has, you know? And it became just part of his character. And it actually became a beautiful part of his character. You know why? Because it showed his passion. He could not do anything without feeling it to the depths of his soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that from Ted for sure. Now, I'd like to let the folks know that in this book, there are some amazing, never-before-seen photos, some that I've really enjoyed. There are some people that you wouldn't be surprised to see Ted with. And then, although from Boston, there are some that you would be surprised to see Ted with. So I advise the people pick up this book and look at the photos. Now, sharing Dad with the public must have been a real chore. I pride myself, Claudia, and we're speaking with Claudia Williams tonight, the daughter of the great Ted Williams, that I know where stump knockers. I know where both stump knockers are. Speak about how hard it is to share the great Ted Williams with the public and how hard it is to go out in public and have people grabbing at Ted and wanting a piece of him when really he belongs to you.
You know what? It's a very fine line. I know that there are many fans out there that just adore Dad. And I also know that it is those same fans that helped Dad to the level of fame that he achieved. Okay, and I respect that and I admire that. But as children growing up, we had limited time as it was with our dad. So when we were with him, it was like we were selfish. We wanted him for us because our time with him was limited. And don't forget, when he had John Henry and I, he was in his 50s, okay? the world or his fans already had a good 20 years, 30 years of his attention. But now his two children are there, and we want it, and we only got to celebrate him for maybe 25, 30. So that sense of urgency to spend as much quality time with our father definitely was apparent when we went out in public, because, as I told in one story, it felt like a feeding frenzy. You know, people would just come swarming in and just want so badly to make a contact with him or connect with him. But I will say this, Bill, the older I got, I actually learned to appreciate it. And I'll tell you why, because there was such an overwhelming feeling of love for my dad from these people. There was such an overwhelming feeling of pride for who he was as an American. And I'll tell you what, I had seen more than one time an African American come up to my father with tears in his eyes and thank my father for having the courage to stand up during his moment in history when he was inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame, to take that moment to recognize Negro League players. Who does that, Bill?
Right.
Who does that anymore in life, okay? Daddy had no other incentive. He did it on his own. He took the time. The Hall of Fame itself, before he went out to give his speech, asked him, please, you know, we would prefer if you don't mention the Negro League players, because you know what happened in 1963, right? Martin Luther King had just given his I Have a Dream speech. So barely 3 years later, Ted Williams is on the podium about to be inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. And what does he do? He mentions the likes of Josh Gibson, Satchel Paige, and then he ends his induction speech by not only recognizing Willie Mays, who had, I think, the day before, maybe 2 days before, hit a home run that surpassed Daddy's 521, and not only recognized him, but encouraged him and told him to keep going and that he was pulling for him, okay? That's huge.
Definitely. And that, speaking of the Negro Leagues and African Americans, Jim Mudcat Grant has a great comment about Ted on the book's jacket. And speaking also of being a great, great American, talk about the great day that Ted received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, Claudia. And one thing that I recognized about that day, which is a rarity, is that Ted is wearing a necktie.
You know what? My brother and I sat down after that day, and we figured out that Dad wore a tie in his, let's say, public life, because we're not sure about high school and what he had to do in school. But as far as his public life was concerned, Daddy wore a tie 3 times in his life, okay? And that was the 3rd time. And it was a tie that John Henry gave him, because the tie that Daddy pulled out looked like he came from the 1940s and looked like maybe Moth had a bite or two out of it. And John Henry was like, Dad, that's so out of style. Wear mine. So, yes, that was... He brought up a great story, because if the old timers game is my fondest memory, this has got to be my second, if not my first, because I tell you what, I don't have any children, Bill, but I felt like the proudest parent in that crowd. I was watching. I didn't take my eyes off my father, and I could not have been more proud of him when he received that award. And I just, oh. It brings tears to my eyes, because I know what it meant to him. I know how close he was with President Bush. They were truly good friends. Politics aside, they were buddies. They were flight buddies.
Mm-hmm.
They were fishing buddies. And my dad had a wonderful opportunity to stay in the Lincoln Room in the White House. And in the middle of the night, here comes the president, right? He knocks on the door, and he's like, Ted, come here. I want to show you something. And they go into some other room, and the President of the United States pulls open this drawer, okay, and there's over 5,000 handmade flies in these drawers, okay, from we're talking 200 years before. The history of all the ties that have ever been made were right there in that drawer, and Daddy just was beside himself. He just loved it so much. So wonderful day, wonderful moment, and I'm so glad that that happened because it just highlighted one more time not all that Dad did. And he wasn't just a great baseball player. I mean, overwhelming. They don't make him like Ted Williams anymore.
No, a true heavy hitter that day, that's for sure.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
Now, one part of the book that mortified me, Claudia, as a man, is the bringing the boyfriend home for the holidays story.
Oh,
my God. I can just hear the man saying what he did. Now, this poor guy, did he stay overnight?
Oh, yeah. We stayed for about five days.
For those, I'll just let you in on a little secret. Claudia brings the boyfriend home, and Ted just says at dinner, so is this the guy you've been sleeping with? Now, this guy has to be thinking as he's laying in bed at night, I'm stuck, and then Citrus Hills is literally in the middle of nowhere. This guy has to be thinking, how am I going to get out of here? I'm stuck in the middle of nowhere. What am I going to do with this gentleman for 5 days?
Yeah, it was a grueling, like I said in the story, it was truly a trial. It was a grueling, hot Florida trial. And that poor boy, you know, he went through hell and high water, but he did very, very well, and he ended up earning my father's respect. And we are, to this day, very good friends, and we can laugh about it. And he was, obviously, I tell, a lot of my stories in the book are first or very significant stories.
Yeah.
And he was my first love. He was my very first serious boyfriend. And, you know, my dad would always kid me as I was growing up. It didn't matter if I was in fourth grade, fifth grade. He was always asking me, are there any boys? Are there any boys? And I'd be like, no, Daddy, there's no boys. And then finally one day he calls me, and I'm at college, and I had met this boy. And he was a little bit older, and I told my dad that I was really would like to bring him down over Christmas break. And, oh, my gosh, it's a wonderful story because it's something that every young woman has to go through at some point when she brings that boy home. You know, and that poor guy, when he met my dad, I had drilled him on the way down to be, you got to do this, you got to do that, and make sure you don't do this. And if my dad swears, you can't take it personally. That's just the way he talks. And we got to get our hair cut, and you got to be clean.
Man.
It was pretty funny.
He deserves a medal, that poor guy, yeah.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Claudia Williams tonight on the Talk of New York Sports. One other thing I could relate to you on, Claudia, is the elder care. Now, there are some great touching stories of John Henry Williams and Claudia caring for an ailing Ted. My dad was in 10 years, Claudia, in Nature Coast Lodge. I don't know if you know where that is.
I do.
Yeah. Now, I visited him every month for 10 years around the corner there on Route 491. And you certainly did your job of taking care of Ted while he was ill. And, folks, you'll see some great stories of that. And you and John Henry certainly deserve some kudos for the work you did with Ted while he was ill.
Thank you. Thank you very much for saying that, Bill. It's that experience that encouraged me to go and get a second career and become a nurse. I have to tell you, my heart breaks for the many, many senior citizens out there that don't have a loving family around them that will care for them as they get old or come visit them when they are alone. And my brother and I and father, we all made a promise that we'd always, always be there for each other. And John Henry and I certainly did that with our father. I'm certainly doing that with my mother. And I also did it for my brother. So I think it's in my blood to be a caring person. And I'm very glad to have graduated nursing school in May. And I also just got my license in the mail. And you ready for this?
Sure.
My license number starts with the number 9.
There you go. What else could you ask for?
Yeah, and tell you, I look for little things like that, and I find them in many, many places, little signs that I'm doing the right thing. And whew, like I said, I love my father. My intention is to honor him and my brother. I think my brother was very misunderstood. He was a very good boy. He was a very good son. And you know what? My goal with writing this book is to just give you the stories that best reflect who we are as people. And then you can form your opinions. Mm-hmm. Then you can make your judgments. That's fine. That's totally up to you. But just here it is. Here's an open option for you. If you want to look at it, take a look. I think you'll enjoy it. I think you might laugh. I think you might cry. But it's completely written with an open heart. I put my whole life on the line. You know, it's I don't hold back. I tell the good and the bad. And, you know, it's hard when I get criticized because I've gotten some criticisms and I've gotten some great praise. But you know what, Bill? The best part is that I know that my word and my truth is out there.
Right. This for you folks is just a wonderful book, full of heartwarming stories of. It's full of life after number nine hangs it up. He becomes number one in the hearts of two great kids through thick and thin, through life and death, from promise through fulfillment. But the legends, they live on. The book is called Ted Williams, My Father, from HarperCollins Books. Check Barnes & Noble, Amazon. Well, Claudia, maybe next time I'm in town visiting the folks are over at Farrow's, maybe we can all have some lunch down at Stump Knockers or somewhere.
I hope you do it, Bill. I would love to meet you. That would be fantastic. You look me up when you get in town.
I will. All right. Claudia Williams, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Claudia.
Thank you, Bill. Take care, dear.
You too. Next up in the second half, we'll talk to former big league hurler Milt Pappas. Stay with us, folks.
Sports Radio New York on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
Check out the Sports Radio New York network of shows every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. Call in to our live shows at 631-888-8811. Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio NY. And be sure to check out all past shows online at sportsradiony.com. And now, back to the talk of New York sports with Bill Donahue.
All right, we're back with the talk of New York sports on Sports Radio NY, WGBB, Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you here. Just a beautiful last Sunday in June here on Long Island today. July 4th weekend is upon us. That was a great job by Claudia Williams tonight with us. My next guest was a 17-year veteran on the major leagues who pitched for the Orioles, Reds, Braves, and the Cubs. He won 209 games. He was a three-time All-Star who pitched a no-hitter on September 2nd, 1972. I'd like to welcome to the Talk of New York Sports tonight, Milt Pappas. Milt, welcome.
Thanks, Bill. Glad to be on.
Glad to have you with us. Now, you signed with the Orioles at the suggestion of Hal Newhouser. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, well, that was a little bit too much. Actually, the gentleman who scouted me from the time I was about 12 years old was Lou D'Annunzio with Baltimore. And he was a, you know, he's covered the Detroit area, and Newhouser was like a supervisor, but I never saw Hal very much at, you know, as far as the games were concerned. Lou was the main man, and he was the reason why I signed over to Baltimore, and one of the reasons anyway.
You were always noted as a control guy. You never walked more than 83 guys in a season. To what do you attribute that, Milt, that your excellent control?
Well, I'm glad I didn't really think about it, because I probably would have ended up having troubles. So I just, even in high school, grade school, whatever, you know, anytime I was pitching, I threw strikes. I had just absolutely perfect control. And obviously it stayed with me as I grew up and followed me into the major leagues, thank God. So it makes a big difference when you can throw strikes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because your infielders know that you're going to throw strikes, and your outfielders, and so they're not back on their heels. You know, they know that I'm going to throw a ball closer to the plate, so, you know, they got to be ready.
Definitely. Now, you played with some interesting guys on Baltimore. Baltimore, you're with most of your career. Hoyt Wilhelm, did you pick anything up from Hoyt?
No, he was a knuckleballer.
Yeah.
No, that pitch there is like when you can't throw anything else, you throw a knuckleball.
Yeah, nothing from
him.
No,
it's a very, and he had one of the best, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, of course, the catchers didn't like him too well.
No, couldn't pick that up except when it stopped rolling.
Yeah.
Now, how about Whitey Herzog? There's a character that was on the Orioles. Did you know playing with Whitey that he'd be such a successful manager?
No, but you sort of had a sense of what guys were really aware of the game, and I don't mean that facetiously, but you could see where they were studying, and they would ask questions, and, you know, Whitey was one of those guys that, you know, was always talking to Paul Richards and you know, asking him questions of, you know, he didn't second guess. Somebody would ask him why this happened and why that happened, and he just kind of followed through and kept going and became a very successful manager. Of course, he had a good team, too.
Yeah, he did. That's for sure. We're speaking with Milt Pappas tonight. Now, you became the ace of the Orioles staff. Now, I read somewhere, Milt, that you gave up Roger Maris's 59th home run. That's a fact, in 1961. Now, you threw him nothing but fastballs because you didn't like the fact that Ford Frick, the commissioner, was going to put an asterisk next to the home run mark.
I thought that was really, really bush of the commissioner to do something like that, because I guess he was a close friend of Babe Ruth, and he didn't want to see the record be broken. Well, you know, records are made to be broken, and he should have been cheering. You know, he should have been cheering, you know, Roger as well as everybody else. And I was just tickled to death that he did. You know, he hit the 59th off me, and he finally did hit number 61. You know, the last day of the season.
Right.
You know, and Roger was just, and unfortunately, the sports writers and TV people didn't like Roger that much, and the only reason they didn't like him is because when he answered questions, they always answered him either yes or no. Roger was a big from North Dakota or South Dakota, and, you know, he just, all he wanted to do was play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
All the other stuff to him was was baloney. I mean, he would shy away from reporters when they came to him. So towards the end of that season, when all that stuff was going on about Babe Ruth's record, my God, poor Roger, he was, his hair was falling out, and I mean, he just almost became a recluse. He just didn't like the limelight at all. He just wanted to play ball.
That's it. He just wanted to play, and the press gave him a hard time. And I'm sure knowing that Ford Frick wasn't a friend of him gave him a hard time too. Yeah,
that didn't help the situation.
Definitely. That's interesting, and I'm sure a lot of people are on your side as well. Definitely, Milt.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people didn't want to see, you know, Ruth's record broken. But like I said, records are made to be broken.
Sure.
I probably, I mean, this is only my assumption, but the only one I can see really never be, I shouldn't say never, but the chances of that record is a 57-game hitting streak by DiMaggio, or 56.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't see anybody doing that.
No, not these days. Now, how did you feel leaving the Orioles going over to the Reds?
Well, it was tough. You know, that was my first experience, you know, being traded. Because when I came with Baltimore, I came right out of high school. I never went to the minors. So the 17 years I spent in the major leagues was all but 2 weeks. And so, you know, it was quite a shock. And it was even more so is the fact that I was a player rep for Baltimore and down in Florida and for the winter meetings. And my wife kept calling me and says, you're in the paper every day about getting traded. So I said, where? They said, San Francisco, this and that. And I said, oh, man, you know. Then it quieted down for a while. And then, what's his name? They did Lee McPhail and Hank Bauer, who then was the manager of the Orioles. They came into Florida, into Miami, to attend their winter meeting. So I happened to run into them at the Fontainebleau Hotel. And I, you know, went up to both McPhail, who was the general manager. I said, you know, Lee, I said, my wife is calling me. She's very concerned, like every other day, even though we're only going to be in Florida for 4 or 5 days. But, you know, that I'm getting traded. And they said, oh, no, no, we would never trade you. You're the ace of the staff.
Right, yeah.
Well, that lasted 2 days. And then I got traded for Frank Robinson.
Which made it worse because the people had a fit.
Oh, my God, yeah. Cincinnati just hated me. Every time I took the mound, they booed me. And I'm, you know, I'm looking at them and I say, hey, you know, I had nothing to do with this, people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that was just being a ball player, and I got caught. And we're at the end of the season, man, he just laid into every. I hate Baltimore, and I hate this, and I hate that, and I want to get out of here, and I don't want to play here anymore. And he just went on and on and on. And guess who got traded? Me.
Yeah. So then you won.
And they went on to win the World Series. So in 66, they won, you know, they beat the Dodgers 4 straight.
Yeah, he was invincible over there. He had made over Frank Robinson.
Well, but they call him an old 30 in Cincinnati.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I don't know. It's every time I saw Frank after that. I kept telling him I made him a star.
Made him a Hall of Famer, yeah.
Made him and he didn't laugh in the beginning, but you know, then a little after that I kept saying, you know, I made you a star, and now he started laughing about it, and, you know, so yeah, I said, hell, he said it took me longer Hall of Fame while you were going there.
Yeah. Oh,
I should have gone in anyway to looking at my record and Don Drysdale. And my Drysdale's record was 209-166, and my record was 209-164. So I had a better record than Drysdale. And hell, I never got by, you know, maybe 5% of the ballot, which was baloney.
Yeah, well, you aren't far. Well, your record is close to a lot of decent pitchers, though. I looked that up.
Yeah, Yeah, I was surprised. I surprised myself. So, but you know, after seeing what Drysdale going in with that red gun, I'm thinking, man, oh man. I said, you know, why shouldn't I go in?
The great Drysdale, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
Well, in 72, you went 17-7. You pitched a no-hitter. Now, there's some controversy around that. You almost pitched a perfect game.
Well, to me, it should have been a perfect game.
There was a problem with Bruce Fleming.
Bruce Fleming, he was just as a total jackass.
Yeah.
And why he didn't call that a strike, I mean, he's a very, very arrogant man.
What happened? I'll recap it for the folks. Milt retired the first 26 batters. He was one strike away from a perfect game.
There
was
retired 26 men in a row.
And, right.
And I had one ball and two strikes on the hitter, the 27th hitter, and he decided to call them all the pitches on the outside corner. He decided to call them all balls. And so I lost a perfect game. And then the next guy popped up, and I got the no-hitter. But I was really jawing at him, chewing him out. And he came halfway out to the mound, and I said, if he throws me out of this game with still the no-hitter, I said, I'm going to attack him.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it was too late. But then I noticed years later, and I didn't notice it that day, that he came halfway out to the mound after he blew it. And when he turned around to go to home plate, he was snickering.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, my God. I probably would have. I don't know what I would have done if I would have saw that then and there after he blew the perfect game, especially when you look at Don Larson's perfect game in a World Series. The last pitch he threw wasn't even close to being a strike.
Yeah.
But he knew, you know, the umpire knew what was going on. A perfect game. Are you crazy? You know. And I told Fleming that the next day. He wanted me to sign a ball. I said, I'll sign it to you, but I'll sign it. But I know you can, you know, shove it when I'm done with signing it for you.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I guess you're upset. I said, yes, you're damn right I'm upset. Perfect game. He said, well, it wasn't a strike. I said, did you ever see the last pitch in the World Series to Don Larson? I said, mine was so much closer and right there in the outside corner than Don Larson's last pitch. But the umpire knew what was going on. Perfect game. Are you crazy? Man, he raised his hand so quick, so hard. You know, that's it. Perfect game.
Unreal. Yeah, it's not right, Milt. Oh,
no,
boy.
I saw and look at what happened, a couple of years ago with that Detroit pitcher. You know, that the umpire called the play at first base, called him safe, and the guy was actually out.
Another heartbreak, yeah.
Yeah, and if they had to replay that, they did in the next year, but not then. And the umpire blew it, he knew it. The next day, I mean, he was crying that he, you know, broke up a guy's perfect game. And I'm thinking, well, why didn't the commissioner step in?
Exactly.
You know, he could overturn that.
Yeah.
You know, so why would you let that poor guy, you know, go through that malarkey and pitching a perfect game and then have an umpire blow it on one of the last plays of the game?
It's unbelievable.
But I like the idea of the replay. I think it's going to be a help. I mean, it's not the fact that the umpires are bad. It's just that some of these plays are so bang-bang that it's really difficult. Even the TV, when you look at the replays, it's really difficult to pick it up. But somehow, they're doing it, and I think it's really helping.
It can only make it better. It can only make it better.
I think so.
Yeah, you're right. And we're speaking with Milt Pappas tonight. Now, 1973, you won seven games. And ironically, you passed the 207 victories of Al Neuhauser. Now, you retired with 209. And You became the first ever 200-game winner who did not win 20 games. Now, that happened, a couple other guys did that later on.
Right.
And it's pretty good company. It's Jerry Royce, yeah. Frank Tanana, Charlie Huff, Dennis Martinez, Chuck Finley, Kenny Rogers, and Tim Wakefield have joined you in that club since, and that's a pretty,
well. It just shows you that we have longevity.
Yeah, pretty decent group, you know, right there.
We didn't have Tommy John surgery like all these guys today.
Yeah, these guys come out of high school having Tommy John surgery.
Just insane that every year you pick up the paper, you know, four or five, six guys are going through Tommy John surgery. That's, man, oh man, what's, you know? I just think they throw too much. I don't mean in the game. I mean, you know, before the game and in the wintertime. Hell, I never picked up a ball in the wintertime.
It's almost like a prerequisite, a guy having Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, I mean, it's every day these guys are throwing. What, you know, in the wintertime, every day they're working out and doing this and weights. And they say, what are you doing? I said, you know, God only gave you so many pitches for, you know, for that arm. And why the God's name are you... how you doing that? You know, with the with that, it's just, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Definitely. Now, I don't know if you know this, Milt. Now, during your career, you were in the top 10 in ERA 8 seasons, top 10 in wins 6 seasons, the fewest walks per 9 innings in 9 seasons, top 10 in complete games 7 seasons, shutouts 8 seasons. And you were tied in the league lead with perfect fielding percentage in 4 seasons. So, not too bad.
Not too bad for a guy they said would never make it.
Yeah. Now for
yeah,
you.
That's also the, I didn't know that I had struck out. I threw 9 pitches and struck out 3 guys in a row.
That's right. Not many guys have done that.
No.
Struck out the side on 9 pitches.
Shocked to hear about that and was... Also, something else that popped up the other day, too, about something I did, and I can't remember that now. I can't remember it now. But, you know, I have no regrets. I enjoyed it. I think, you know, that they're not going to ruin the game of baseball, but it's just what they're doing is just unbelievable with, you know, with the Tommy Johns and the work ethics, and the starting pitchers only pitch 5-6 innings anymore, and I mean, it's just insane what they've done to the game.
Yeah, it's like the relievers. You have a guy to come in the 7th, a guy to come in the 8th, and then you have a closer who throws 4 or 5 pitches.
Yeah. The sad part about it, these guys are making big money.
Goose Gossage, a guy like that, used to come in the 7th, throw 3 innings. A guy can't do that now.
No. You know, and to make the money is just insane, and... You know, and you ask them, I do, and I say, how'd you get to where you're making that kind of money? Well, I don't know. I said, well, we did it, for God's sakes, the player reps.
Yeah, right.
The guy, we're the ones that did what will get you guys to where you're at today. And I said, you do nothing for us. Nothing. I said, if you can't do it, you know, for the pension because the IRS, you know, prohibits that or whatever, then do it on the medical plan. We've got guys that... are dropping out and they can't afford the premiums. You know, can't afford the premiums.
Exactly.
And here we got a pension plan that's over $2 billion in funding. And you can't do nothing for us? Come on.
No.
That's just insane. You know, they're going to take their millions of dollars and the pension plan has totally been... when I hear about what's happening with the pension plan... Because originally, when you came in, you had to play 5 years to get vested in the pension plan, and 20 years was the maximum at age 65. Today, they have one-day vesting. You can play in the major leagues for 1 day, and you're entitled to a piece of the pension, and it's only 10 years maximum. It's just...
Yeah.
I mean, they've got it so good. It's just... It just blows me away.
It's the best union in the world.
Oh, my Lord.
It really is.
Well, we know we were smart. We hired Marvin Miller and got him on our side, and best thing they ever had in baseball was us hiring Marvin Miller.
But he's not in the Hall of Fame. I'll never know.
No, and he was upset with that. And he finally said, to hell with it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go in if they asked me now anyway.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I loved the guy. He was so sharp. And, the owners hated him because he was smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just unbelievable.
Well, what are you doing these days, Milt?
Well, I'm not doing anything now. I just, I was with the company. I didn't even know I was with them. And I got about 2 months ago, I got a nice big scroll, and it says, congratulations on 25 years with the company. Hell, I didn't even know I was with them that long. And I turned 75, so I said, well, I think it's time.
Hang them up.
And time to hang them up and retire again. And, you know, and these guys playing today, you don't hear them talking about retirement. There's no way in hell they make so much money, they're set for the rest of their life. We, all of us, had to go to work.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, when you're making $6,000, $7,000, $10,000 a year, come on, people. You know, everybody thinks because you played, you know, professional athletics that you're rich. Well, I got news for you. Look at what Ditka was doing with the football players, trying to get more money for the pension plan for the old guys. That's sad.
Yeah, you're right, Milt. Well,
we're the guys that set the table.
You did. Well, it's been great talking baseball with you, Milt.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time to share part of your Sunday night with us.
Yeah, anytime.
You take care. Milt Pappas, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me tonight for the Talk of New York Sports. I'd like to thank my guests, Claudia Williams and Milt Pappas, my engineer, Brian Graves, and you for joining us. I'll be back with you next Sunday night, July 6th at 8. Till then, Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.